How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, May 10th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Joined as we are by Dave Meltzer, and a lot of stuff to talk about today, Dave, including huge announcement by UFC. Real big deal here. All UFC fighters are now insured.
Insured as far as injuries go, yeah.
It's a big one.
It's a big one, yeah. Yeah, and I was, it's interesting because the subject's been brought up many times in the past. As far as, you know, UFC and Dana White would always say that it's impossible. How can you get a policy to insure, 200 fighters? Well, they got one for 350 fighters or so. And it's probably pretty darn expensive to get, I would guess.
Yeah.
Fighters are not paying any premiums. They're covered for any kind of injuries. They can be non-fight related, non-training related injuries, because they don't want fighters being hassled by insurance companies, saying, well, you were in a car wreck and that's how you hurt your neck. You didn't hurt your neck training. So they said any kind of injuries, not illnesses at all, but only injuries. So it's pretty significant. The IFL did this a couple of years ago, so this is not, even though they kept saying this is, we're the first combat sports company ever to do this, they are not. But they're the only one that I know of that's doing it right now. So they're to be commended for this.
Well, the big key to it is if you were injured during a fight, for example, and WWE largely does this as well, if you're hurt during a show or that sort of thing. Like John Morrison's neck surgery, they picked up the tab for that. But this now helps the guys who, let's say that Gray Maynard, for example, and Frankie Edgar are training for a fight, and one guy injures his back, the other guy, which is actually what happened. We'll talk about that in a bit. But unfortunately, this didn't happen prior to June 1st, but I think they'll be taken care of. But now, if you get injured in training for a fight, normally if you were an undercard guy and you were training and you got hurt and had to pull out of a fight, you had to pay for your surgery or whatever the case might be. You didn't get paid for the fight. It was pretty much a disaster. And now you'll at least get the injury taken care of.
Yeah, yeah. The IFL actually paid guys salaries, if they were injured, they would still get paid, which of course they went out of business also. But
that is true.
These guys. So this doesn't. You're not going to get, like, if you get hurt and you miss a payday, you're going to miss the payday. But at least you're going to be able to get your injury fixed. A lot of the fighters, because without insurance, they would get injuries and they would not get it checked up because they couldn't afford to get it checked up. So, Lorenzo Fertitta, they had a press conference today, and, he said, for a guy like George St. Pierre, this means nothing. George St. Pierre, is going to see the best doctors and all that, but for, a young fighter, a preliminary fighter, they were not going to be able to afford the best doctors, and this allows them that. And, it's a lot of the stars were already taken care of in this situation. I remember Tito Ortiz with his back. There was a big thing because UFC would not pay for his back surgery that he had a couple years back. I remember many years back, and he was complaining about it because UFC would pay. I think they paid at the same time for a similar surgery by Nate Quarry, and it was the fact that they didn't. They paid for some people's injuries, but they didn't pay for others, and they had no, rule to do it, but they did it for some. So this one, at least it's a consistent policy.
So what happened with Maynard and Edgar?
Well, I guess Edgar pulled out 4 days ago, and they kept it under wraps with broken ribs. He also has, a back injury. And so they were searching for opponents for Maynard, and Maynard had a knee injury, and he also had a cut above one of his eyes, I think of a left eye. And they offered him Anthony Pettis, and at first he agreed. They also considered Clay Guida and Ben Henderson. And I don't know what the status is, because Henderson just fought a couple days ago or a week ago. And so I don't know if he was willing to come back, but the idea was that whichever one of those guys, you know, let's say Maynard would face Henderson, that would mean Guida and Pettis would fight the next week, or if they decide to go with Guida against Maynard, then Henderson would then fight Pettis, which actually would be an interesting fight because their last fight was so awesome. But as it turned out, Maynard ended up pulling out of the fight because of his knee injury. So they're both out, and they're looking at doing that fight maybe August or September, because Edgar's going to be out probably 8 weeks. Then you got to get ready and train back for a fight and everything. So delay is everything. And, you know, that lightweight division has been, you know, there's a lot of fights ready to be made, and this delays everything. You know, Pettis was supposed to get his title shot a long time ago, and this, you know, delays that by a couple months. Jim Miller, potential title shot delayed by a couple months. Gilbert Melendez, potential title shot delayed by a couple months, you know, maybe by close to a year by the time they get to it. So, unfortunate, you know, the card, you know, of course it hurts the card. There's going to be no replacement. It's going to be Quentin Jackson and Matt Hamill is the main event. Roy Nelson, Frank Mir is the semi. Thiago Alves and Rick Story being moved from the Spike show to the main card. It's not a marquee thing, you know. But the truth of the matter is that Maynard and Edgar was not a draw. You know, I mean, it wasn't a draw on January 1st. And even though they had an awesome fight on January 1st, it was proving not to be a draw for this one. And if you'd actually seen the original commercials were built around, you know, Maynard and Edgar versus Maynard 3, that which was still going to be the theme. But I noticed like last week they had new TV commercials, and they were actually opening with, they mentioned obviously Maynard and Edgar, and it was still going to go on last as the main event because of the title match, but they were focusing more on Jackson and Hamill, and with the idea that Jackson and maybe Mir are actually bigger draws. But still, this is going to be a tough one as far as...
I think it was going to be tough either way.
And it weakens the card. So, yeah.
It weakens the card in that there's one less fight. But, I mean, I don't think that Maynard and Edgar are selling one single fight above what your base is going to be, quite frankly. And
yeah, you know, I mean, we're figuring this is, what, 250, 275.
Sure.
And it probably isn't going to go any lower than that, you know, without that fight, I'm guessing.
But, you know, if they did a countdown special and they focused a lot of it on Edgar Maynard 3, and then you now have to do another countdown special where you can focus a lot on Frank Mir and Roy Nelson trash-talking each other, and Quentin Jackson's a charismatic guy. I mean, that might make for a better countdown special, to be honest.
The countdown special is going to focus on all three anyway, so this will just focus on two of the three, and then you ditch one, and then you probably... maybe you can add, instead of, you add a few minutes to each, or you go maybe in and push Stefan Struve and Travis Brown. So, yeah, you know, it weakens the show because it takes away a title match, but it wasn't like a big marquee match either way, so...
It is interesting that with now over 350 people on the roster, this fight gets scrapped, and granted, you know, we're only 3 weeks away or so, but still, they didn't bother replacing it with another fight. There's one less fight on the show.
Well, I mean, there's no point in that. I mean, it's not like it's one guy who needs an opponent.
You can have two guys get another fight this year.
Yeah, but everyone's booked. I mean, that's you know, they don't
all
have
350
guys
people. That sounds ridiculous.
They do the Strikeforce guys. They have the Strikeforce guys aren't booked, but they're not willing to put the Strikeforce guys on UFC shows unless it's a situation like with Diaz with St. Pierre. And they haven't even agreed to do that yet either, but probably will. But a lot of the Strikeforce guys, but the UFC guys are all booked. You know, anyone, you know, there's, you know, you notice most of the times when there's a late replacement, they don't, more often than not, they have to sign a new guy to fill the spot because the roster guys are all booked already.
John Morrison underwent neck surgery today. We'd initially heard it would be several months, but WWE.com tonight said he was going to probably be out I think they said 4 to 6 weeks, pinched nerve.
Yeah.
So could have been a much bigger disaster than it ended up being. But, you know, we'll have some stats coming up in the Observer in a couple of days. But suffice to say, John Morrison is second only to John Cena in total number of matches over the past 6 years. He has worked a hell of a lot of matches. And the top guy, John Cena, also ended up having to have neck surgery. So that should tell you something about working a hard physical style many, many times over several years. But he's out of action for a while. He'll be back somewhat soon, and I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, so it caused some minor changes on tonight's show and the booking for the pay-per-view, because it was going to be Morrison and R-Truth and Mysterio and Del Rio, and now it looks like it's going to be Mysterio and R-Truth. So I don't know where Del Rio fits in. I don't think they're going to do a three-way, because they pretty much announced Cena and Miz in the I Quit match. They didn't do anything to put Del Rio in there. So maybe Del Rio's getting the pay-per-view off, or I don't know. I mean, your next baby face down the list would be Big Show, and it doesn't look like he's in going to work with Del Rio. So,
what did you think of tonight's Tough Enough?
You know, it's all right. That thing, that contraption that they were climbing and everything. I don't know what that had to do with wrestling at all. You know, some of the other drills, the drills as far as elbow drops, you know, that did. The squats, I mean, the squats are like a staple, you know, as far as doing that. So, you know, it was all right. You know, Austin's promos at the end are always the highlight of the show, and this week was no exception. And Ivelisse Velez was cut because her leg was injured, and I thought it was kind of uncool that Booker was, like, accusing her of faking it. Austin did not buy that at all. He believed that it was real, especially when you saw how it happened, because it was on the show the week before. And, you know, and she showed a lot of heart and everything, but, you know, she was just hurt. She couldn't go on. And poor Eric Watts got stuck on this climbing thing, and he was like a kitten in a tree and could not get down for an hour?
97 minutes he
what?
Was stuck. 97 minutes.
Jesus Christ. I mean, could you imagine actually, like, being there and just standing there waiting for this guy to just, you know, I would never have waited that long.
Yeah.
But he refused to quit, but, you know.
I thought that was funny. He refused to quit. He'd been up there for 97 minutes. He quit long ago. I mean, seriously, what was he going to do? Wait until, I don't know, the trees fell down or something like that?
I don't know.
How do you count that as not quitting? It was 97 minutes.
He was stuck. He was a big dude. You know, the thing is, it's like, you know, a lot of, you know what I mean? A lot of these drills that are done, you know, they don't favor big guys. You know, it's a lot better if you're a small guy. Yet, it's one of the weird things about wrestling, you know, in the sense that, you know, being able to do a lot of stuff in the ring favors small guys instead of big guys, but they want big guys because small guys are too small. And this was like an example of they're doing these drills, and this one, and even the squat drill to a degree on the top rope, were drills that favor the smaller people because you can balance easier on the top ropes when you're smaller. And yet, you know, like, you know, Vince just wants, you know, Vince is really into big guys who aren't going to be able to do as good on these drills, so it's kind of ironic in that way.
Well, I mean, just one of the things about the show, I really like Tough Enough of late. I think it's a very well-put-together reality show. I love Austin's promos. I even like the sit-downs with all of the trainers where they're discussing each person individually, because it's always a source of great entertainment. But one of the things, besides just the stupid things that they have to do that have nothing to do with wrestling, is this idea that they all do something really hard, and no one can really finish it, or it's really hard, or people throw up, or people spit up blood, or whatever. And then the trainers are like,
"What's Jeremiah Riggs was spitting up blood?
And it's not good."
And they were like, "Well, he didn't quit." And it's like, you know, there's a point. Spitting up blood already, you know what I mean?
You should quit. Yes.
Yeah. But, well, not just you should quit, but you should get a doctor.
Yeah. But anyway, my point is, they do all of this stuff. It's really hard. These guys get stuck for 97 minutes, and then, like, one of the trainers invariably goes, "It's only going to get harder in WWE." And it's like, that's bullshit. Hmm. Why don't you take Kane and The Big Show and Mason Ryan?
That's what I was thinking of the same thing.
Zeke.
It's just like, if you took like most of that roster and you threw them up on that thing, I mean, a bunch of those guys would have gotten stuck.
Far more than 50% would have been stuck in that thing.
Yeah, and the ones like the squats on the top rope, you think that all those guys are going to be able to keep their balance? I mean, like, they're probably better than Andy Levine, but still, you know, not all of them. I mean, you know, it's one thing to stand on the top rope, but it's another to be doing squats and stay in that, what would they, like, stay in that squat position and have people bounce off the ropes and knocking you off? Jesus Christ.
Isn't a gimmick when people hit the ropes, you crotch it? Yeah. And not to mention that, I was watching Raw, and there was a spot in the women's tag where Kelly is running the ropes, and she was significantly worse than anybody on Tough Enough right now running the ropes tonight.
I couldn't believe, you know what's funny is I couldn't believe how bad she was running the ropes, because she actually, like, normally isn't. So I don't know, what's the deal? Did she, like, just get afraid of the ropes or something?
I don't know if maybe
that was so weird watching her just like shy away from the ropes.
It was hideous, just hideous.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but yeah. She was running the ropes worse than the worst person on that show.
Yeah. But hey,
and there she is.
It only gets harder in WWE.
Well, if you're a main eventer, the schedule's pretty darn hard.
The schedule's hard, but what the hell does that have to do with this contraption? Why don't they take these tough enough guys and have them travel the country?
I think the whole idea is you know, you make it look like those guys actually got to do it, and you kind of like respect them, even though the reality is that, you know, none of those guys went through this. They went, I mean, you know, a lot of them went through hard training, you know, and you know, having, you know, a lot of the, you know, schools were, you know, I don't know. Like, it's different kind of schools now, so I shouldn't really say that. Because, you know, like, in the, you know, but I mean, I think in FCW and everything that they probably do a lot of calisthenics and stuff. And in OVW, they did a lot of calisthenics and stuff. Because I remember when Big Show was in OVW, he was always throwing up, you know, because he couldn't keep up with everybody.
Sure. But by God,
and then,
he made
of course,
it.
Then he got brought on the roster and he was the main eventer.
Of course. Let's talk a little bit about the Raw show this evening. This was, we've got a couple of weeks left until the pay-per-view. And so, obviously, they're starting the build for that. And the opening segment on the show, I know you haven't seen all of SmackDown yet, but the opening segment of the show, I thought by the end was pretty damn good. But early on, I was so pissed off the first 10 minutes or so, because it was the exact same opening.
Oh, yeah, no, they're doing, that's the new thing now, is they're doing the exact same thing on both shows.
Yes.
The same week, just with different characters.
A guy comes out and says he should get the shot. Then another guy comes out and says he should get the shot. Then another guy comes. It's so long. And
well, this one, at least we got a three-way instead of just one, the fans picking the shot.
At least there was a twist to it here. But Alberto came out first, and you know, he talked about how he should get the shot at John Cena. And he had Ricardo out there repeatedly saying Alberto Del Rio and shouting his name. And then Ray came out and argued that he should get the shot. And then Miz, and finally, Truth. So we had all these guys out there, and Truth actually cut this awesome promo on all four guys, and I thought he was golden on this show tonight, just golden. And so after being, like, the highlight of this segment, the GM dings and says that all four of you men have made compelling arguments, but only three of you deserve to potentially get a shot.
You know, I'm going to disagree with you on one thing. I thought that Truth was really good, except I thought he was, in many ways, very... In the middle of this, when he started talking about constipation and stuff, I just thought it was just like, it just took you right out of, you know, it was like this bad scripting of, you know...
Well, I can't blame him. They gave him a stupid line.
Oh, I'm not. I'm just saying that, everyone, you know, I mean, stupid lines are part of it, unless you're, you know, someone who's so good you can overcome it. But, I mean, there were... You know, there was like that point where I was just like, yeah, God, you know, this is just going right to hell.
Yes, they do this shit all the time, but not his fault. Not his fault. He did the best he could.
You know, and all that on and on about how bad hospital food tastes and it makes you constipated. And it's like,
didn't need
the line. You know, that segment went 20 minutes. If they cut all that out, it would have been a much better segment, and it would have also gone shorter, because you never need a 20-minute segment like that. That was ridiculous.
So the GM announced that, of course, Truth was the one who did not deserve a chance. Didn't even deserve a chance at the title, the GM said. So, Truth...
Well, he blew his chance. He had his chance, and John Morrison beat him for it.
Well, they all got beaten here.
Well, Miz has gotten beaten.
Miz lost last week. Ray Alberto lost a title to Edge.
Ray didn't lose.
Ray didn't lose, but
Ray won. God, by the way, poor Drew McIntyre. He's not even on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, the roster's
not
so deep
good
right
for
now.
Him. Yeah. Not only that, I think he lost to Chris Masters for Superstars.
That sucks.
That's really bad.
Yeah. So the after he stormed out, he had the best crazy facials of all time until Jerry Lawler came out a little bit later. But he stormed out, and it broke down into this brawl. And what basically happened was, Miz said he didn't care what anyone had accomplished, and he's calling Alberto and Ray day laborers. And Ricardo jumped in to announce that Alberto Del Rio would be the next champion. So Riley attacks Del Rio, which causes Ricardo to dropkick Alex Riley, which got a babyface pop. And then we had a full-scale brawl. Miz and Riley bailed. Ray wiped out Alberto with a dive. And that was pretty cool there at the end, I will say.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, it really was. It was good. Yeah. It was pretty funny.
Ricardo Rodriguez is awesome.
Yes,
just
he is.
Just awesome.
Yeah, he is. And Alex Riley, I just want to go away.
We'll get into him
Why
later.
Why doesn't he ever go away?
Not only is he not going away, not only is he still on Raw as a SmackDown superstar.
I mean, like, how many times have they broken him and Miz up?
Not only that, he was like Steve Austin in the 90s when they tried to put him in every fucking segment on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And by the way, we didn't mention this in Tough Enough, but John Morrison was on that show, and God bless the guy, but I'm not certain that wasn't a robot. Was it just me?
Yeah. Just not, I know.
He sounded like completely wooden. I don't know. I was flabbergasted when I saw him on that show there. The Bellas against Kelly and Eve. As noted, Kelly was horrible here. And, of course, she worked the entire match, all 30 seconds or so of it. Pinned the Bella. And then Karma came out. Kelly bailed. Karma killed Eve. Laid her out with the implant buster. And
well, Eve attacked Karma, who no-sold at first.
Well, yeah, she ran at her and then ate a clothesline. And thankfully didn't get injured like Alicia Fox. So there you go. Kane and Mason Ryan, this feud must continue.
This wasn't quite as horrible as last week, but still, my God.
I love
what are they doing?
I love when Kane has to wrestle another big stiff and decides he's going to throw a bunch of low drop kicks and high-flying, agile moves. It never works.
Oh, and especially when you have a guy who doesn't know how to sell any of them.
Yeah.
Oh.
So then Punk tried to distract Kane, and so Big Show just ran over and knocked out Punk with the KO punch. Things don't look good for Punk either at this moment.
Well, you know, I mean, that is what they do when a guy's leaving.
Yeah. And then Otunga and McGillicuddy ran down for the DQ. Kane and Big Show beat them up, double choke slammed Mason, and I don't know.
What was when that was over, I was thinking, what is the purpose of this segment?
To me, it was
what
like,
did it accomplish?
I couldn't figure out if they were trying to bury Mason or not, because they didn't beat him, but they sure made him look like an idiot.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, if you remember, they double choke slammed Ezekiel Jackson. So I guess that since they're doing the exact same script on both shows, now it's the time to double choke slam Mason Ryan when you're following the same script. But I couldn't understand, like, okay, if you're building up Mason Ryan, then why? Because it's not like you needed a double choke slam. You could have done it to frickin' Otunga, you know what I mean? With the same pop, and let Mason Ryan escape with some heat. So I just, like, when it was over, I was like, what are they doing? And goddamn, you know, I guess, you know, they've already done it to, you know, Otunga. I mean, it's so funny to me when, you know, all that time and you just hear, oh, hey, David Otunga's got it. David Otunga this and that. He can talk. David Otunga this and now look at him. You know, mm-hmm. it's like the, you know, management was this thing of this super charismatic guy. And, of course, we all knew he didn't have any charisma. But it's like they kept insisting that he did. And now I guess they've given up. I guess they realized that they were full of shit when they were saying all that stuff.
We had the new and improved Dolph Ziggler, they called him.
Improved?
I guess what they said. Don't blame me.
Yeah.
What's the opposite of improvement?
Not improvement. Going to hell.
It's going to be a singular word for this, but...
Ted DiBiase.
I guess so, yeah. So anyway, he beat Santino. Clips of Orton and Christian.
He still looked like a cardboard cutout of a wrestler.
Yeah, of course.
And he doesn't look happy either.
Well, I would guess he's not happy with his haircut.
I would guess he'd be not happy, period. Right about now.
They beat Santino. He could have lost to Santino.
Yeah, that's true. He could be Ted DiBiase completely instead of just looking like Ted DiBiase.
The new guy interviewed Truth, and he was all pissed off and said that there was clearly a conspiracy. Del Rio, Mysterio, and Miz would get theirs on his time. He's sick of people telling him to sing and dance and say what's up, and trouble was coming. So then he left, supposedly.
Yeah, well, I think that everyone kind of knew he was coming back.
We had Miz all pissed off at Alex Riley, and Riley's trying to apologize, and it was a lover spat, essentially. And he said he was going to show... Miz is basically just burying him, calling him an amoeba, troglodyte, the lowest form of life. And Riley said, I'm going to make it up to you. Watch this. He then proceeded to walk to the ring. They did not go to commercial. We just saw him walking to the ring for like 2 minutes. Finally gets there, challenges Cena. They have a match. Cena makes his comeback, goes for the FU. Miz comes out. Cena gives him another attitude adjustment, puts him in the STF, makes him tap right in front of the Miz. And that was the end of
something.
Riley for this moment. But of course, there's more to come.
Yeah.
They said that Cena would get to choose the stips for Over the Limit, which is coming up in Seattle. That was going to be determined after the main event. Cole was in the ring. He said he had a big announcement. That was that he is determined to win the Most Disgusting Promotional Tactic Award of 2011, which I think is a safe bet that he could. Talked about how he was going to retire and this and that. Lawler wanted another match, essentially. And Cole said, not going to happen. Lawler offered to induct him into the Hall of Fame personally and put his Hall of Fame ring on the line if Cole would do a match. And Cole said, I don't think so. Got back into the coal mine. Then once he was inside, he started ranting and raving about this and that, and then started talking about Mother's Day. And he said, you know what I did with my mother yesterday?
Blew his mother into Texas, and they had, they drink mimosas or something?
They drank something, and they watched Cole beating Lawler at Mania over and over again. And he said, there's nothing better in this world than spending the day with your mother.
Oh, boy. I was cringing at this because it was like, I didn't think that this was going to work, and it didn't work.
No.
And you knew where it was going.
No. So,
people
yes.
liked it. He didn't really get booed. I mean, it was people were going like, oh, shit. You know, it's like, don't go there. But
it's
he went
2011.
There.
People don't buy into this bullshit, and they just see it for what it is, which is bullshit by WWE.
This was bullshit, because it wasn't really, you know.
It was like the worst kind of cheap heat.
Yeah, because it's cheap heat. You know, it doesn't even work.
No.
You know, you don't even connect with your audience. The people that are watching are just going like, God, you're low class. You know, I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's like, God, this was so bad.
If someone emailed me tomorrow and said, I'm not watching Raw for the rest of the year because of this segment, I'd say, good for you. Good for you.
Well, no one's going to not watch Raw over it, because if you did, you would have stopped watching wrestling, you know, long ago. I mean, we've seen far, far worse than this, but which is not defending it, because it was just a direction that didn't work. But you know, I mean, Lawler got mad, and then in the comedy moment of the entire show, Lawler went in there, stormed the coal mine, and Cole had left the door open, so Lawler had to pretend that the door wasn't open,
mm-hmm.
trying to climb over, but did grab his tie.
Actually, that was later. First off, he tried to get in, and Swagger made the save and rammed his head into the coal mine, and they took Lawler away for a while, which led to the next segment, which was Kofi versus Swagger for the U.S. title, a match we have not seen 1,000 times in the last year.
Yeah, we have.
I know, I was being sarcastic. But they're doing this match, and suddenly Lawler comes out on the ramp, and I got to say, I don't even care if this guy's in his 60s. If Lawler came after me with the look on his face that he had here, I would be scared shitless. He was going to kill someone. And he went down to the coal mine, and there's a hole in the coal mine for some reason. I don't even know what it's used for, but he reaches in, and he grabs Cole's tie, and he starts yanking on it, which causes Cole's head to ram repeatedly into the glass.
Smush his nose in his face. It was awesome.
It was fabulous. And Swagger grabbed the mic and went nuts and said that Lawler was fired because he wasn't allowed to lay his hands on Cole. And Lawler noted, "I never touched Cole. I only touched his tie," a line that only Lawler could make fantastic. And then Swagger says, "On behalf of Michael Cole, I accept." And it actually made me sad because, like, Lawler was so unbelievably awesome here. And, like, a real creative team with a clue would have been able to come up with a motivation that would have made Lawler just as pissed off without referring to someone who'd actually died.
Yeah.
I just
And they probably would have come up with, like, a better way to... It's like they do this thing where Cole's getting all this heat for refusing the match. And, I mean, their way to get him to accept the match was so lame.
Yes. Swagger accepts on his behalf.
Swagger accepted for him. I mean, does Swagger have power of attorney for him or something?
Apparently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was the best and worst, really, of WWE. Lawler himself was just unreal. And
yeah, but you know what? I mean, it's what we've said about this feud. You know, it's good, and Lawler was really good when all was said and done. And I mean, there was a pop to a degree when they kind of said that the match was going on. But, I mean, I can't get into that match at this point.
Well, it also was like... You know, it was really awesome to see Lawler, you know, grabbing him by the tie and ramming his head repeatedly into the coal mine. I mean, people loved that. It looked awesome. But so now what do they do in the ring? We just saw him beat the crap out of the guy and humiliate him. We're not going to see holds. We're not going to see a great match.
It should be a thing where they have two coal mines and each has to wear a tie and they just grab each other's tie and smash each other's face into the glass.
Yank back and forth?
Yeah. It's better than them trying to do a wrestling match, especially if it goes more than 5 minutes and they have to do a heat spot.
Which they undoubtedly will, of course.
I don't know. I mean, it was pretty consensus that WrestleMania match sucked, and that they, you know, and the way it was laid out. You know, I mean, Dean Malenko got a lot of heat for that layout, so I'm thinking that it won't be laid out the same way. That's the one positive out of this.
We had Miz, Mysterio, and Del Rio for a shot at the pay-per-view. Opened up with some cool three ways. Broke down to that match where one guy's outside, the other two guys are doing spots. Whole deal. And finally, we've got Alberto hitting the arm breaker on Rey in an arm bar. Miz went to break it up, got cradled. And then out comes Alex Riley. And it should be noted that Lawler, during this match, noted that the referee was Mike Chioda, same ref who DQ'd Miz the week prior. And moments after this announcement is made, Riley goes out there, and he gets foiled briefly, and Rey ends up sending Alberto into him, hitting the 619, hitting the big splash. The ref drops down the pin to count the pin, and Riley, right in front of the referee, same ref that DQ'd him last week.
Well, they made clear that in three ways there's no DQs.
Oh, is that the deal?
Yeah, in three ways. Yeah, so. So it wasn't a screw up.
I see. Well, yeah, he pulled him out of the ring right in front of the referee. Well, that begs the question then: why the hell didn't Riley just come down at the beginning of this match and just double team everybody the whole time?
I do not know.
Because I'm thinking too much.
Well, you know, it is kind of flawed that inherently in WWE three way rules, which they really, I mean, it is consistent, but you know, they never really harp on it that there's no DQs, because why would there be no DQs?
I know.
Why inherently in a three-way would there be no DQs? And I don't know what the rules are in a four-way, but in a, you know, why, you know, if it's a three-way, no DQ match, but yeah, it's just a three-way match, there's no DQ, so it basically tells you that, you know, you should have, you know, Alex Riley should be running in, Ricardo should be running in, everyone should be running in.
Sure. I mean, if a guy interferes,
right.
If a guy interferes on your behalf in a three-way, just eliminate you. Then it's just a one-on-one match.
Yeah. Anyway. Or just, yeah, exactly.
So they did that whole deal, and Miz rolled up Rey for the pin. And then we had another one of my pet peeves in WWE. Cena comes out and announces that the match of the pay-per-view is going to have no countouts, no DQs, no pinfalls, and no submissions.
Yeah, that one was really, that one, when he said no submissions, it's like, what the fuck is a no, it's an I quit match.
So you don't, a submission is not a man admitting he quit?
Exactly.
So yeah.
Exactly. I mean, is that the stupidest thing?
It's really dumb.
It's like, when we said that, it's like, oh my God, you know, do you think these things out? It's like, It's like they don't know the difference. You know, it's like, what the hell is I quit?
Well, quite frankly, it is a man submitting.
Exactly. I mean, the tap is the equivalent of saying I quit. They're the exact same thing. Somehow they're trying to make it like it's different.
Well, everyone, it's not.
Yeah.
Then Truth ran in and hit his move on Ray, and there you go. Truth and Ray at the pay-per-view, most likely. So that's Raw, everybody. And tomorrow, SmackDown, we'll get the fallout of Christian losing the title they claimed. And I don't think they announced any other matches, did they?
They didn't announce any matches for SmackDown. No
matches for SmackDown, so there you go. All right, let's jump into the mailbag here. You can always send your questions to mailbag@wrestlingobserver.com. We'll answer them here on the show. This person here has a question about Trevor Murdoch. Is he back, or was this a one-time payday for a dark match? Thanks in advance.
Probably a tryout or something like that, where they looked at him. But I guess they probably have interest in bringing him back now. And they do need bodies.
This person says, if Brian and Dave didn't know it was May 2011, and I merely told them Raw had Cena winning, Miz winning due to someone else interfering, and Cole mocking Lawler, would they have any idea what month we were in?
Well, you know what, though? That's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
You know, what can you say?
What was up with Dusty Rhodes announcing for monster truck shows on TNN in the late 90s?
Just got the gig, famous guy. They thought he appealed to the monster truck demographic, and he very well may have.
Oh.
I mean, Stan Lane did the speedboats. He still may, for all I know.
Yeah.
And Chelsea does something. I don't know. What show is she on? I forgot already. I saw it once.
Asking the wrong guy, quite frankly.
Yeah, she's now that she's off TNA, she's in a TV, she's in some sort of a TV show where she, I don't remember what it was. It's like, God.
What was her name?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I just remember Chelsea.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'll look it up here. I'm really enjoying the new season of Tough Enough. I was wondering what happened to Hawk Youngkins from season 2.
He tried to be an actor. I think he tried to be an MMA fighter at one point. Tried to be a pro wrestler. Did a little bit of all of that. Now is probably doing none of the three.
All righty. They also said he shaved his head and later had multiple personality disorder.
Yeah, well, that was kind of obvious on that show. He was kind of a case.
All right. I was watching a video of Stan Hansen going completely crazy after apparently getting potatoed by someone. He pretty much destroyed the building, throwing chairs and tables into the ring, the crowd everywhere, chasing fans all over the place. How did the promotion react to this? I can't imagine that would happen if a wrestler did this in the States. Did this happen regularly?
It was all an angle.
Any good stories of wrestlers chasing down fans?
Well, in the old days, they used to do it all the time.
Yeah.
They don't do it now. You can't do it because of lawsuits, and you're not supposed to run in the crowd, and you're not supposed to scare fans.
That is true.
It's different, They still do. They still do it in Japan. They still chase fans in Japan.
Allison Skipper.
Okay, that's her name.
That's her name.
Yeah. What's the name of the show?
I'm trying to find out. Her website is, of course, impossible to navigate.
Oh, that's good.
But a resume. Maybe that'll help.
I think it might be on G4. That made me wrong. But it's on some obscure channel and some obscure show.
All righty, let's see. Television, TNA Wrestling.
God, she claims it. Good for her.
Yep.
A lot of people erase those things.
Girls and Guns.
It wasn't that.
Daily Buzz.
Might be Daily Buzz.
Dr. G Medical Examiner.
Not that.
It sounds like.
God
College
damn,
Experiment.
What?
College Experiment on FoxSports.com.
That's the one I saw her on.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, Fox Sports. That's right.
Also has had some commercial work. Papa John's.
She did pizza commercials.
I guess she just ate commercials and stayed skinny, or ate pizza and stayed skinny.
She probably didn't eat the pizza. She probably just was in the commercial.
And special skills, bowling, cheerleading, commuter skills, dancing, kayaking, Pilates, rollerblading, running, swimming, teleprompter, and yoga.
She has a lot of skills. She's got more skills than me and you combined.
I don't know what the skill of a teleprompter is.
You can read off a teleprompter.
To me, that's just reading.
Yeah, but I mean, if you do it really bad, it's pretty bad.
That's true.
You know, they should have a skill in WWE when they interview announcers, and it should be like being able to keep your cool while being yelled at incessantly.
Yeah. I'm wondering why they just have a teleprompter on Raw. Wouldn't that make things easier? Just put a teleprompter in the ring.
They sometimes used it. They did it for Adam Lee, and then he screwed up anyway. I've seen them use teleprompters for spots.
Oh,
they don't
man.
Do it much, though.
I wonder if, like, for Adam Lee, they just actually fucked it up on the teleprompter, so he'd screw it up, you know? Guarantee he'd mess up?
I don't think that happened.
Mm.
Yeah. It'd be funny if that was the case, but I don't think that was the case.
This is an ironic question given Raw tonight. They seem to be finding ways to incorporate Jim Ross into Raw. Do they have intentions of bringing him back full-time?
Well, if they would, you'd think he'd have been on the show tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, after they took Cole out, they had a spot for Ross right there, and they decided not to bring him in. I don't think they know what they're doing when it comes to Jim Ross. I think that there are so many weird emotions at play there that it's...
It's not just Ross.
What?
It's not just Jim Ross.
No. Yeah, but he's kind of the epitome of it in the sense that, you know, like Jim Ross really should be announcing the show, and like almost anyone would agree on that, as opposed to some of the other things where it's kind of like debatable, you know, what's the right move and the wrong move. But there he is, not announcing. But wrestling. I mean, it's like you have Jim Ross, and what are you going to do with him? Let's have him wrestle on pay-per-view.
Sure.
That's the best use of him, is to have him go in there and wrestle and break his hand and punch out Michael Cole. That's really, you know, what he could be most valuable for.
All right.
Not like getting over new talent. Not that, you know, again, an announcer ain't going to be able to get over new talent the way they book him, but...
He'd do better than these announcers.
What?
He'd do better than these announcers are doing.
Yeah, that's true. But in the end result, you know, I mean that Mason Ryan Kane thing was just like mind-boggling on every level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, if you're going to put Mason Ryan over as a monster, think about this. Wouldn't you book him with, like, Evan Bourne to where he, like, looks really big? As opposed to booking him with a guy who actually makes him look not big when all he's got going for him is that he's big.
Well,
it's like crazy.
It's even crazier because they're actually, they're doing it right with Karma, for Christ's sake.
Well, yeah, but they can't mess that up because they don't have any big women to make her look small.
Well, there's always time.
I mean, they could, if they brought back that other, some other giant woman, you know, like Rock Khan or something, and then, you know, then they could do that. DNA did that.
This person here says, as you and Dave have discussed many times, whether it is expanding Impact to 2 hours or moving to Monday nights, TNA always seems to be reaching for that next carrot. Right now, that carrot is rebranding themselves from TNA to Impact. After they have moved past that carrot, what do you think TNA's next carrot will be?
Doing more Impacts on the road, which is going to start real soon. And then after that, I don't know. What will come next? A new set?
Yeah, maybe like a new Titantron or some new Pyro.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Maybe by then, like, Vince will like get mad at somebody and they can bring them in.
I was going to say credits, but they've already got credits, at least at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but the...
Yeah, Kurt's not going to WWE.
Where'd that come from?
He's not going.
Were there rumors he was?
No, but he's going to sign a new contract with TNA, and he's going to wrestle in the Olympics, or at least try.
Uh-huh.
Kill himself trying. I don't know about that. I mean, like, well, nobody does. I mean, seriously, Kurt is probably the only person on Earth who actually, if he even believes that he's doing it, because no one else does. But he's out there with his nephew, and they're training.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more here. Just finished reading J.J. Dillon's book, and in it he stated that no one with a wrestling mind ever ran WCW, which is why it failed. Said Bill Watts was the only one with a chance to make it succeed because he has a wrestling mind, but the dirt sheets outed him as a racist, so he was fired. Do you think he ever did have a chance to succeed? Everything I've ever seen or read has painted Bill Watts as a terrible booker and was quite hated when he was in charge of WCW.
He was quite hated when he was in charge of WCW, and his booking wasn't working at the time. But you know the funny part of that is that 4 years later, he went to WWE when Vince hired him, and Vince told him he was going to step away from the creative end, and he wanted Bill to run the creative end. And there, it's like Bill must have Bill didn't his basic situation was is Bill had sold the UWF Mid-South Wrestling in 1987. And he just moved on. He didn't watch any wrestling at all. And they came back in 1992, and the business had changed. And he didn't know that. He thought it was still where it was. And so, the talent had changed. His idea of who top talent was were the guys who were top 5 years earlier, which, a lot of things changed. Didn't really know the new guys. Had a certain way of doing things that none of the young guys could relate to. Some of it was good. There were things that were good, and there were things that were completely nuts, such as, not letting guys fly on. Heels and babyface had to be on different airplanes because they just had to be. So you had a situation where, they would alternate. Like one group would have to take the early flights, and the other group would take the late flights. So some guys would have to take these ridiculous early flights because they couldn't take the late flight because it wasn't their day, and nobody could leave the building early because you had to stay until the last match was over, which is, I don't know if that's necessary, especially if you're a veteran. I mean, I can sort of see it if you're like a young guy and you're learning, you should watch every match, I get that. But if you're a veteran, you really don't, and let's say you're on early and you can take a flight out or something and spend an extra day at home with your family, and this wouldn't let you, I can see where that's going to piss people off. Well, anyway, but the point of all this, he didn't relate well to talent whatsoever. The booking wasn't working, and he was out. But when he went to WWF, I think it was 96. And Vince said he was going to give him full control. And everyone there they all thought that Bill was a freaking genius. So, I don't know if Bill, I don't know what the situation was, but it didn't last long because Bill believed that Bret Hart should be world champion and not Shawn Michaels, and when Vince overruled him, Bill went home and said, you gave me full control, and he goes, well, I changed my mind. And so Bill said, well, I guess it's time for me to go home, and he did.
Speaking of J.J. Dillon, he'll be our guest tomorrow afternoon on Figure Four Daily, so everybody can check that out. We'll talk to him about a lot of different things, including Cauliflower Alley, in fact. So that's coming up tomorrow. We've got a new Figure 4 out tomorrow, a new back issue of The Observer out tomorrow, new issue of The Observer, a new issue out on Wednesday. And, of course, a lot of radio shows from the last couple of days, so make sure you head up there and check those out. We'll be back on Wednesday with a brand new show, Dave and I. So that's the plan. We'll talk to you guys again after a while.